comes a time when the world of politics and the world of science and the world of atheism and the world of free thought all collide, and we find ourselves perhaps showing a little bit more of a hand than we would normally find appropriate. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and joining me today is Dan.
Hi.
Hi, and Amber.
Hello.
Hi, you're new to the show, and
yes.
So here's the deal, everybody. And just to give you an idea of where we are right now, there are ways people do science in this world, and ways people talk about science, and ways people talk about the law. And there is a law. There's a initiative on the books right now, known as I-522. And while I won't say that people who are for I-522 are exactly like creationists, because I think creationists are doing it specifically for you know, cultural privilege and cultural superiority. But honestly, the approach to science is exactly the same, to the point where in a conversation we have decided that I-522 supporters are basically the Tea Party of the left. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. However, we will only be taking calls in the third segment because we have a lot of information to get out today, and there's a lot of data here, and we need to substantiate my claim that I-522 supporters are basically the Tea Party of the left, and my guests today are here to help me with that. And I thought we would first substantiate that claim. I thought we would talk about the studies that they use to, that the people on the pro I-522 side use to tell us that these things are bad.
Well, the first study that you see cited everywhere is the Seralini rat study.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a study which was done in France last year. And it's basically they fed Roundup to rats.
Right.
And it was a horror, deplorable methodologically. It was probably animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed to get the results that it got.
So rather than testing, it was a study designed to make something happen,
right,
rather than observation.
Right. It was designed to show that Roundup is toxic to animals.
Okay.
So they've chose a strain of rats that is known to get tumors.
It said 70% to 80% in that strain, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
And then they basically fed the rats for 2 years, and all the rats got tumors.
Okay.
So it wasn't very much of a surprise. What Seralini did, which was incredibly unethical, was that rather than to publish this first and then and have it go through the process of scientists trying to rip it apart,
Yeah. He
kind of did a press release first, and he gave it in advance to journalists,
right,
under the agreement that they would not show it to any scientists.
If I remember, without the non-disclosure agreement, I seem to remember Wakefield doing something similar with the autism study, where before being published, he basically hit the talk show circuit talking about how vaccines cause autism, which turned out, this study was eventually pulled because the science behind it was not correct.
Right, yeah, you don't get to go into a study with your idea of what's coming out already. You can make predictions, you can have hypotheses, but you don't set up a study to confirm your suspicions. That's not how you design an experiment. You design an experiment to try to refute your own hypothesis. What you're really trying to do is test something by breaking it, not by confirming your idea. It's like the Cat in the Hat says, the way to find where something is to find where something isn't. And
right.
That's what the process of science is. Figure out everything that is false, and sort of by process of elimination, you get these little sort of rapidly shrinking truths as you cut away and cut away and cut away more pieces until you really get at the truth of the matter.
Mm.
And the Seralini study was not even designed to be science. It was designed to be propaganda.
Okay.
He put the study out ahead of time so it would get plenty of press. It didn't take but a day for almost every scientist out there to be able to read it and see that they used statistical tricks, they didn't have the proper controls. It was a mess, but you'll still see it on every anti-GMO site.
Do you know what journal it was published in, or if in fact it was published at all?
It was published, and I'm sorry, I don't have that right in front of me.
That's okay. So yeah, we're trying to figure out where it's published. There's weird things about this law. Is I already hear people asking a question. Well, if the rats are only 80% likely to get tumors, and then in this study the rats got 100% of the rats got tumors, isn't that significant?
I would say that really depends on just how many rats you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you're trying to do a study where you're determining whether or not something is carcinogenic, you don't go in saying, this is carcinogenic, I'm going to prove it.
Right.
You go in saying, I want to know if this is carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't use a strain of rats that is, you know, through artificial selection, unaccountably prone to cancers. I mean,
right.
these rats were bred to be cancer prone, to study cancer. That's not the rat that you go in with in an objective study.
And that was actually published in the Food and Chemical Toxicology.
Okay.
I really don't know how it got through the peer review process.
All right.
But we've recently seen that many journals have a problem with peer review, especially open access journals, where recently, I believe it was in Science, there was a fake study that was put out, and out of 300 open access journals, 157 of them accepted it, even though it had no scientific merit whatsoever.
I was about to ask about that. Yeah, that's part of the problem with the scientific method in peer review, is that it takes a lot of work, and sometimes people want to cut corners. So not only do we have to look at whether or not it was published in a study, we also have to look at what the study actually says and how it works with other studies and how it works together and how it's been, you know, how the study itself went through the scientific method. You can't just trust the fact that it was published, because that's essentially an authoritarian argument, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're, like you were saying about open access publishers, plenty of publishers have a really, minimal sort of screening process,
right?
Where it's like, well, you know, you paid to be published, and so you get published, and one of our guys is going to look at this and say, okay. But in responsible scientific journals, the publishing process is like facing a pack of jackals. I mean, you're standing among your scientific peers and your scientific betters that are trying everything they know to tear your paper apart because they are responsible scientists. That's what you do. You subject a paper to this hole punching machine where every scientist in your field looks at it and tries to punch holes in it, because if they punch a hole in it, you get a little bit of scientific street cred.
Yeah, and some people don't realize that publication is actually the first step of the scientific process as far as going towards the consensus.
Yeah.
You have peer review, then people jump on your study like a pack of wolves, as Dave said, and then of course you go to replication. Unfortunately, many journals don't publish replications, which is a problem. But I should mention that PLOS ONE, which is an open access journal,
mm-hmm.
On the internet, is one of the journals that did not accept that paper. And not only that, they actually found flaws with it that all the other journals didn't. So the fact that a journal is open access doesn't mean that it's not trustworthy. You have to look at impact factor and things like that.
Well, here's an example of that process you were talking about in action. The journal PLOS ONE found holes that no other study found. Now you have a credibility that many of the other open access journals don't have. That is the scientific process working.
Absolutely, and it's in your interest as a journal to try to punch as many holes in things as you can, because if you get a reputation for publishing things that are, easily refutable,
yeah,
then you end up sort of like certain websites I could name.
So another problem, or another study, or not necessarily a study, but another scientific thing, another scientific MacGuffin, we'll call it, that people are referring to, is this group of 400 and something scientists who signed a paper that said, or signed a petition that said, be something about GMOs or something like that. You were talking about that.
Yeah, I believe it's actually 96.
Oh, wow.
The consensus in the scientific community has been for a while now that GMOs are no riskier to people or the environment than conventional plants. That is the consensus. You're always going to find people out there who don't agree with it. There are climate scientists out there that say global warming is not happening.
Right.
A
declining number. But,
yeah,
yeah,
they're declining, but they're also a declining number of people who say that GMOs aren't safe.
Right. But it's sort of the same problem we have. There was a similar paper. The reason I came up with that 400 and something number is because that was one of the numbers they were touting for a while of a group of scientists who said we must be skeptical of natural selection and the process of evolution. The problem with that is scientists, I realize that in movies, you can get cast as a scientist, and that's all there is. You are a scientist, period, full stop. That's all you are. So you're the guy, you're the guy, the geek guy on the kids' cartoon who can equally build a microprocessor and construct a cat from scratch. But science isn't actually like that. And so when you looked at the creationist, or when you looked at the be skeptical of evolution study, you found, mechanical engineers, you found automotive engineers, you found a bunch of people who were not a part of the science of biology and evolution. I suspect that might be the case with the GMO petition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are several people on there that aren't scientists.
Right.
We have, especially, as I mentioned before, with the global warming issue, there are a lot of physicists out there claiming that global warming isn't happening. They're not climate scientists. And that doesn't mean that they can't train in that area and have expertise, but you better know what you're doing if you're going up against the consensus.
Absolutely. And as you're saying, you find the same sort of thing with evolution denial, that I know a person who has a triple doctorate in mathematics and is one of the most brilliant physicists I've met, but is a biblical creationist. Being able to speak on something with authority doesn't rely on just the title of doctor or PhD attached to your name, but actually being relevant to that field. For instance, I study biology. Sam is quite the programmer. I know nothing about computers, and so I couldn't speak with any authority on computers any more than Sam could speak about salmon morphology.
Yeah, the only thing I know about salmon is that they're tasty, and the only thing I know about whales is that they were in Star Trek. On these sorts of issues, I am completely uneducated, and because of the way I talk, I would call myself an idiot on these subjects. But the thing about being an idiot is sometimes you can correct it. So what we're noticing with these studies is that they are not so much scientific studies as they are sciencey marketing. And you were telling me before the show that there's a lot of marketing that went into I-522, even in terms of its authorship.
Well, the author of I-522 is a marketing director.
Right.
Not a scientist, and not anyone in the food or agriculture industries. Mm-hmm. The text of I-522 was lifted mainly from the Prop 37 in California that was earlier this year or last year?
Yeah.
So it's very similar. Unfortunately, it also appears that it may be against the Washington State Constitution.
Wow.
So there's a very good chance that if this law does pass, it'll be struck down anyway.
So this is just sort of a historical query. Is there any sort of precedent for marketing directors using political lobbying for unethical purposes?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, even if there is a huge precedent, my point here is that this is not a bill that is rooted in science. This is a bill that's rooted in other things. Is that what we basically have here is somebody who just says the tool is bad because I don't like how people are using the tool, without a skeptical and without a scientifically positive look at how the tool is being used, what it can do and what it can't do. And I think this is especially key when we're talking about a technology that could literally absolutely keep billions out of starvation and millions free of disease and things like blindness. You were talking about golden rice.
Golden rice is a really cool project. It's mostly a nonprofit, and basically it's to correct for vitamin A deficiencies in underprivileged or undernourished populations.
Yeah.
Vitamin A deficiencies can cause a number of diseases. Sort of the obvious ones have to do with eyesight and sort of a cloudiness of the eyes. But basically, by going in and saying, okay, we've engineered this rice that has way more beta-carotene we can correct some of these problems without changing anybody's diet, without changing anybody's cultural practices, mm-hmm. just by, you know, using this product as a medical intervention for a society. And I think when you're looking at a product like this that has the ability to reduce human suffering, what I really want to question here is, why does anyone not want to use this?
Right.
Well, I think it's fear. I think people put a lot of emotion into their feelings about food. One of the issues that I've heard brought up with the golden rice issue is that people will say, well, why don't they just grow other vegetables? And they're not really understanding the issue as to why we did this with rice. Well, right. They don't have any other vegetables, and it's difficult and expensive to change agricultural practices from one crop to another. It's very easy to just start planting golden rice.
Yeah.
And it's already been done. It's ready to be marketed, or not marketed, but actually donated.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the anti-GMO lobby around the world has been very effective at terrifying people. And you may have heard recently in the Philippines that a bunch of the golden rice fields were destroyed because they're afraid of the technology.
And this is the point where I start saying this is the Tea Party of the left, is that we have this simple product that is being donated, that is not being done for the purposes of product or, you know, of profit, which can prevent people from going blind, because they're treating arable land, and this is something I do know about, they're treating arable land much like they treat scientists, that a scientist is a scientist is a scientist. Agricultural land is not agricultural land is not agricultural land. Yeah. There's a reason Vidalia and Walla Walla, Washington's onions only grow in those two places, and it's because the way of the soil is, and the, you know, the sulfuric compounds in the soil. There's a reason corn can grow in some places, wheat grows in the other. It's climate, it's the makeup of the soil, it's the quality and what minerals is found in the water. And that becomes especially important when you start talking about things like pesticides.
Absolutely. Pesticide use has, unfortunately, there's a misunderstanding about the increase in pesticide use since Roundup Ready began to be used.
Yeah.
Roundup Ready is a plant plants that have been engineered to be resistant to glyphosate, which is an herbicide, and it's
commonly called Roundup.
Roundup, or, yeah. Right. It disrupts a pathway to an aromatic amino acid, and which we don't actually have, so it doesn't affect humans in any way. It just affects plants. Because of that, because it's selective only for plants, you use more Roundup when you have Roundup Ready crops, but you're not using the incredibly toxic pesticides and herbicides that we used to use. You're also able not to have to till the soil, so you're not putting in fossil fuels into tilling. You use less water. Fewer pesticides and less labor, obviously, and you also don't lose topsoil because you're not moving it around.
Yeah, and also your crops have higher yields because they're not getting out competed in their own field by weeds that have evolved very well to do just that.
Right. This is Ask an Atheist. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we are going to follow the money, as it were.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to Ask AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, and I'm not telling you the phone call because we're only taking the phone number because we're only taking calls in the third segment because we're talking about genetically modified organisms. But first, I would like to thank everybody who stepped up to Peggy's challenge this week. I'd like to thank Chris from Colorado Springs and David from, how do you pronounce that town?
Steelicum.
It's Steelicum. Okay. Steelicum. I was told I got it wrong. If you'd like to help keep the lights on for Ask an Atheist, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, and click on the shiny yellow button, and it'll take you right to PayPal. And it'll help, and like every dollar you give us goes directly to show production. Also, at the end of this show, we are going to be going to Northern Pacific Coffee Company at 401 Garfield Street in Tacoma, Washington. It's near the PLU, and it is an all-ages venue, unlike our usual Doyle's hangout, and so we would like to see you there. So as we were talking about GMOs before we went into the break, what I said is we want to follow the money, and what you'll hear is every time I've spoken up on Facebook, on social media, in person about the problems with I-522, I get what you guys got was you're called like a shill for Monsanto or Fox News. How often have you guys heard that?
I get that quite a lot. I'm very fond of arguing on the internet, just sort of as a pastime between writing papers and things. It's sort of sharpening your claws. But once somebody decides you're a shill, you know, you can just sort of walk away. You're like, all right.
You're not.
It's like somebody accusing you of being an alien,
right?
Or accusing Obama of being a lizard man or something. It's like, all right, I'm not going to make any logical leeway here. So
I get called a Monsanto shill every single day.
Yeah.
Today I actually got when I explained that I don't work for Monsanto. The person said, well, you're just trying to get a job with Monsanto. So that was a new one on me.
Wow.
So the way that the I-522 supporters are talking about this is they're basically trying to make it hippies versus big business, because that is an idea that really resonates with Western Washingtonians. I mean, they like that sort of thing. But that's not really what the money says. Yeah, of course, on the pro I-522 side, you've got Bayer, Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, BASF. You've also got some organic companies. You've got Horizon Organic. You've got, you've got other companies too. And on the other side, you've got the Organic Growers Association. You've got Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, which would not be, who's been the biggest donor, which to me, given their labels, wouldn't be a ringing endorsement of the logical state of your bill. Good Earth Natural Foods, Boulder Brands, UNFI Inc., Organic Valley Crop Cooperative, Stonyfield Farm, that Whole Foods has also supported. What you basically have here are rich biotech firms versus rich hippies. This is money versus money. You have I could just as easily call you, I-522 supporter, a shill for Whole Foods, and I would be just as accurate, and it would be just as meaningful. Organic farming is not small business.
No, just this year, organic worldwide became $63 billion in revenue.
That's and billion? All, billion with a B. $63 billion.
All the big five tech companies' revenue is $60.6 billion. So actually, big organic is bigger than big ag.
Yeah.
But they also aren't fighting as hard. They aren't putting as much money into it because though if 522 passes, it will be a windfall for the organics industry because this label is designed to get people to boycott genetically modified foods.
And that's the problem here, that this is my take on the bill, is I like the idea of labeling your food, but I want labeling to be based off science. I don't want labeling to be gamed to support a specific industry. There are exceptions in I-522 for companies like Whole Foods, for things like dairy and meat, for organic type farms. Is if you want a label, don't just go halfway. Tell me if it's GMO. Tell me the pesticides you use. Tell me the amount of pesticides that you use. Tell me what you have in the dirt, what infestations your crop has. Give me actual information, not pseudoscience and scare tactics.
The one thing about labeling GMO foods as far as being labeling a technique rather than an ingredient is a problem. But if you want to label GMO foods with the gene that is being expressed or that has been inserted, then you need to also label conventional products because they all have genes, and we don't even know what genes are in there. We know what genes are working in GMO food. So I would much rather, if you're going to label it, label everything. If people really need that information that badly, then yes, let's make it fair and have everything labeled.
And what people don't know, again, full disclosure, I like local foods. I go to farmers markets to get a lot of my produce. I like local organic farms. I financially support, give my money to them. I will continue to do so because I like the wider variety. I like locally grown stuff. There's some real, carbon footprint is really a thing. But organic doesn't mean what a lot of people think it means.
Yeah, one of the issues and I think sort of misunderstandings about the label organic is it does not mean that no pesticides or fertilizers were used.
Yeah.
What it means is that only biologically derived pesticides or fertilizers were used. And in fact, those biologically derived chemicals have to undergo less testing than their synthetic counterparts. So if you're using a plant-derived poison in an area where that plant is not found, it is not known and doesn't need to be tested what's going to happen to that poison when it hits the watershed. And this is all perfectly okay with organic farming. It can still be certified organic if you're using this situation. And a lot of people think that, organic farming, and they picture sort of this medieval Renaissance fantasy world where people are, pushing carts full of manure and carefully turning over their compost by hand. And when you actually take a look at the industry, it is just as industrialized, just as high carbon footprint, and has just as large an ecological impact as standard conventional agriculture does.
Actually more, because organic requires more arable land. You get a 20 to 50%, depending on the study, less yield from organic crop than you do from a conventional crop.
And that's going to become a serious problem. And we're getting close to 7 billion people on this planet. There's that Borlaug guy that a lot of folks talk about who got the Green Revolution started, and then they call him the guy who fed a billion people just because of the advancements in agriculture that happened. And genetically modified organisms, whatever you want to call them, they're a step in that direction, and it's not just something we've started doing. We've been doing this sort of thing for a long time.
About 25 years they've been on the market.
Yeah, but honestly, I grew up around corn. Frankly, the idea of people making plants is not surprising to me.
Yeah, sure. If you look at wild-type corn, wild-type corn is unrecognizable and frankly, not very edible. But we've spent 10,000 years as human beings changing corn by selective artificial breeding to get it you know, large and high sugar and have these great big seeds that are actually worth picking. And we have a history of doing that with all kinds of things. If you ever look at the brassica family of vegetables, which includes Brussels sprouts, includes cauliflowers, includes broccolis, all varieties of mustards and kales, they all come from one plant. And this plant was around in its unaltered state about 12,000 years ago. And since, and especially in the last 100 years, has become all kinds of new things. And this is not through nature being nature. This is through humans interfering with nature to make products that they thought were cool, or, you know, just wanted to get a higher yield or a better pest resistance. And that was done pretty randomly. And then up in about 1930, we got into some really fun ways of doing this with the sort of discovery and popularization of radiation. The atomic gardens came about. And this is cool stuff. For me as a scientist, this is exciting stuff. Basically, they have a circular garden, and in the middle of it, they have a rod of radioactive cobalt-60.
Oh, wow.
And they plant, you know, a garden in sort of wedges, pie-shaped wedges, and looking at the garden from above, it actually kind of looks like the radiation hazard logo. And the idea is to get as many mutations as possible out of this block of seeds.
Yeah.
And we actually still have atomic gardens running in the United States and Japan and in Europe. So the plants at the center usually get killed by the radiation, and the plants that are a little bit further in develop tumors and malformations and all kinds of things. But the plants on the edge is what we're really interested in. They come up with really, really cool mutations. Some are good, some are bad. But it turns out that some of them are wilt-resistant mint, which is the main supplier of the world's mint oil.
Yeah.
Another one is ruby red grapefruit. They are not natural. They are produced by radioactive cobalt-60. If you love ruby red grapefruit, even organic ruby red grapefruit, then you love messing up plants' genomes with radiation.
And I
certainly do.
And I will say I have noticed a lot of cross-pollination, if you will, between some of the anti-genetic engineering people and the Fukushima scare people, to be honest with you. And radiation, it can get bad. But it's not what you think it is.
Right. There's definitely a cross between. There is a very strange area of the left that almost circles around and hits the right with government conspiracy. So it's like one side hates science and the other side hates government, and they kind of run into each other.
So we have in the last segment we talked about the studies and the quote unquote science that I-522 supporters would use to make their argument. What sort of scientific information is there what sort of studies could we cite and organizations that we can talk about that are in support of genetically modifying agricultural plants?
Actually, a great study just came out recently. It was an overview, a meta-analysis of 10 years of genetically modified crop safety research.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a team in Italy. And it literally, I think, just came out in September in Critical Reviews of Biotechnology. And it's a great paper. If you can get a hold of it, I think geneticliteracy.org, you can download it from their website, so you don't even have to have access.
Oh, wow.
So it's a great paper. And they went through everything. They weighted the information as a meta-analysis does, the best information. Information got the most importance, and they found nothing to show that genetically modified crops are any more dangerous for people or the environment than conventional crops, and in a lot of cases they're actually better for the environment. There have been well over 2,000 studies. This study just looked at the 1,783 best of them,
mm-hmm.
and they're not all industry studies. Obviously, about a third of them are independent studies. So a lot of times, and I know this is a problem, especially people will say, "Well, we didn't know cigarettes were bad for you, and we didn't, the oil industry has employed biostitutes to kind of toe the party line, but in the difference in the genetic in this case is that the independent research replicates the research that has come out of industry.
by us to talk.
Sorry. We're both getting the giggles here, trying not to laugh in the studio at the word biostitutes.
I'm bookmarking that one. The other thing is...
We've got peer review here, Sam. Have you ever been with two biostitutes?
Oh, jeez. Oh, okay. All right. Focus. I can't. So that's what we're looking at here is the other thing is we've learned stuff. Tobacco had been with us for it was a societal thing. It'd been with us for a few hundred years at that point.
Oh yeah, and what people fail to realize is it was scientists that got the government to stop saying tobacco was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like all scientists thought this was good for you. They didn't think that at all.
That was never the case.
Yeah, that was never the case. So it was just a matter of them getting the government to listen.
Right.
The consensus of scientists about GMOs is that they are not safe. So they're not safe. There's nothing to, you know, convince the government of here. There's no conspiracy. We can get into things like patent law and things like that as far as what the industry, what their goals as an industry are.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the science goes, it's pretty much, you know, we can never say 100% sure that anything is safe, including any conventionally bred plant.
Even water has a lethal dosage.
Oh, absolutely.
That's true. Yeah.
So, you know,
asphyxiation.
I believe it was David Suzuki who said that if anyone tells you that genetically modified foods are 100%, they don't know or they're lying.
Right.
And that was kind of disingenuous because any scientist is never going to say something is 100% safe. So
right,
he kind of played around with the words a little bit there.
Well, it's like a screwdriver. I used one yesterday to fix my laptop. I could also stab myself in the eye with one. And this is something that I like to talk about is that a lot of people say, and this is, let me be honest for a minute, a lot of people say science gets us into problems. Yeah, scientific advance has gotten us into some problems, but it wasn't not science that got us out of these problems. If science is applied thinking, if science is a logical, structured, applied way of thinking and applying that knowledge, what we're basically saying is thinking has gotten us into problems, and not thinking is going to get us out of those problems? Really? That's weird. And so a lot of people say, well, if science gets us into these problems are terrible, so let's not think about them. Let's not do science. Well, okay, if that's true, how are you hearing me?
Right.
How are you eating? How are you getting around on your bicycle? On your skateboard? On public transportation? In your car? With your shoes?
Yeah, science denial, in no uncertain terms, is civilization denial.
Yeah.
If you're saying that you are anti-science because science is scary, then what you're really saying is, you know, I want to go and be a caveman. I want to go and be a primate and live in an anarchic troop of you know, tree-dwelling, poo-throwing people.
good luck with that.
Yeah,
it's really, you know, a lot of the times I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I like listening to creationists. I don't think religious people are automatically crazy. To me, religion is an interesting pub conversation. It's a conversation that we can have around the pub and we can still have respect for each other. When we start talking about science and people being anti-science and people saying science doesn't help us, science doesn't hurt us, while sitting in a heated bar drinking fermented beverages that do not have horrible chemicals in them.
But they do have GMO yeast.
Yes, they do have GMO
and
yeast.
And they don't have to be labeled.
Yeah. I could talk about that. I'm a brewer. I could talk.
Yeah.
I mean, we have these great hybrid hops coming out. All that great IPA stuff that you're drinking. Yeah, you can thank genetic engineering on
not
that.
Not too much. And most of Great Britain's barley.
Yeah, that Pac-Man yeast, that was done through engineering. Maybe not genetic engineering, but very close. But they are starting to do that with yeast. And the yeast strains that you're getting are amazing because now we're able to pick and choose and just not hope. And we can figure out why Belgian beer is so good. And on the other side, you've got you've got Germans. Germany is very, like, the people are very anti-GMO there, correct?
Actually, yes. All of Europe politically is very anti-GMO.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they don't seem to want to listen to their scientists who are very pro-GMO. And recently, there was a rash of suicides ironically, a rash of suicides in Italy because farming is really, really hard in Italy right now because they can't compete with our GMO crops.
And there's an apocryphal story out there that says that Monsanto has caused farmers to kill themselves. And
in India. In India. Which is not true.
That's not true, but here we have substantiated evidence. And so all I got to say is, and the reason I specifically mentioned Germany, is that, yeah, they might be anti-GMO, but they also have those German beer purity laws, and there's a reason why German beer is so boring. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about genetic modifications and the kind of modifications I'd like to do to myself. Just kidding.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio vs. the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. And we welcome your calls to tell us how wrong we are and to let us know how much money we're getting from which corporations. So one thing that Mike really wanted us to talk about is the quotes that he found when he went looking for I-522 supporters. And so I'd like to read some of those for you and sort of get your guys' reactions. The first one is from Andrew Kimbrell, the executive director for the Center for Food Safety. We are going to force them to label this food. If we have it labeled, then we can organize people to not buy it. And that's basically it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty transparent.
This is Dr. Joseph Merkula, somebody who's contributed significantly to pro-I-522 people, say, personally, I believe GM foods must be banned entirely, but labeling is the most efficient way to achieve this. Since 85% of the public will refuse to buy foods they know to be genetically modified, this will effectively eliminate them from the market just the way it was done in Europe.
And he will make more money because he has a website that sells supplements and that type of thing. He's really into the organic...
And then,
I think he's being a little bit optimistic about 85% of the public actually reading the labels on their food before purchasing it.
No kidding. With labeling GMOs, it will become 0%. For you to label the issues is vital. If you get labeling, then GMOs are a dead end. This is Vandana Shiva, environmental activist. I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The burning question for us all then becomes how quickly we can move healthy organic products from a 5.2% market niche to a dominant force in American food and farming. The first step is to change our labeling laws. So this is unfair competition. There's that quote comes to us from Ronnie Cummins, director, Organic Consumers Association. This is not hippies versus big business. This is big business versus big business. It's big business hippies versus big business scientists.
I like that in his statement he actually uses the phrase market niche.
Market niche. Yeah. Like that $63 billion market niche we're talking
about. It's extremely telling.
Yeah.
What I think a lot of people don't understand about this, a lot of people are worried about the rising cost of food, and costs will go up. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But also, just think about the undue burden on farmers. They're going to have to put in more inputs to their crops if they can't grow GMO, and they will make smaller profits in an already almost profit-free industry.
Yeah.
I don't think people recognize the fact that most farms in the United States are still family farms.
Right.
They're not, for example, Monsanto does not grow any food. They just have test plots, but they sell that seed to farmers who are growing it themselves, trying to make a living, and feeding it to their families. So if it's dangerous, why would they do that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So anybody who's telling you that I-522 is just fair and is just provide information, there are exceptions to the bill which make it easier for organic farmers to get out, and you have people like the Organic Farmers Association saying we are getting this labeling law so that people won't buy genetically modified stuff and will buy our products. This is unfair competition. This is monopolistic practices. This is exactly what people say companies like Monsanto and Dow and DuPont are doing. There is not corporations are corporations. Corporations are designed to make money by any means necessary. That's what they're for.
Putting a cute little leaf on your package doesn't make you not a corporation anymore.
Right. Yeah. So don't pretend that you're on the side of the angels because you don't have any you don't have any genetic engineers on your side. You have supermarkets. You have people with a vested interest in seeing their products make more money and the other products making less money. This is like Microsoft saying that Apple products are dangerous for you and wanting every computer to have that label on it. Would you vote for that law, or would that seem unfair to you? I know how I feel about it. You tell me. So there's something that you want to talk about, and something that's very close to your heart.
Very
and
close
your
to
studies,
my heart.
That is salmon.
Yeah, there is a potential for a salmon to go on the market here. It's so far the first transgenic animal approved for human consumption. The farms are not yet in production, but the salmon is called Aqua Advantage. It's an Atlantic salmon, which is the usual species that is farmed, Salmo salar. And what it contains, basically, is a gene inserted from Chinook salmon, which, if you're from the Pacific Northwest, you'll know are our largest local species. Mm. They grow big, they grow fast, and it's the growth hormone gene that's been inserted into this Atlantic salmon from the Chinook. And to regulate this gene, the Chinook salmon's gene wasn't quite compatible with the Atlantic's, so they used a fairly unrelated fish called an ocean pout. And this ocean pout has a gene that allows it to deal with cold temperatures. And it's this cold temperature gene that actually is going to be activating the Chinook's growth hormone gene. It sounds like a Rube Goldberg machine, but it's all sort of cool. But what's interesting about this is how responsibly it's been taken care of. It's been under testing since 1993. Before they even approved it for the market.
Yeah.
And when you make a transgenic animal, it goes through the drug section of the FDA rather than the food section.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only does this Aqua Advantage salmon have to prove that it is safe, but it also has to prove that it is effective, that the claims made by engineering this fish actually hold up. And the claims are that it grows faster, that it requires less food resource, and that it contains a higher ratio of omega-3 fatty acids to omega-6 fatty acids, which makes it a healthier food.
And I have a question. Is the reason that they're doing this, more of a statement, the reason that they have to do this transgenically is because Atlantic and Northwest salmon are different genera, correct?
That's right, yeah. Northwest salmon are Oncorhynchus, which you'll find Chinook, pink salmon, chum, sockeye, coho, and rainbow trout or steelhead. Are all Oncorhynchus, but Atlantic salmon are actually char, so they're a different genus. So they couldn't directly do this by hybridizing.
And aquaculture is a lot of people see aquaculture as the future of food production.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the problem with aquaculture that you like to talk about is that it's incredibly in its present state, it's terrible for the environment.
Right. Yeah. There's a ton of problems with it, and they're actually being addressed by the AquaAdvantage salmon. One of the problems is that traditionally with Atlantic salmon farming, you have to catch about 3 kilograms of prey fish of, herring or smelt or things to feed the salmon for every 1 kilogram of salmon that's developed. But this AquaAdvantage salmon, it's down to a 1.5 ratio.
Right.
So for every 1 kilogram of salmon you want, you only have to catch 1.5 kilograms of prey species. Another big problem is local pollution with salmon pens, where they're placed out in the ocean, and just all the waste from the salmon sort of gets dumped into one area. With the AquaAdvantage salmon, they're putting the pens on land, and they're actually going to be in Panama, of all places. And that's addressing the third concern with salmon farming, is that the pens tend to break apart, and then these Atlantic salmon can sort of interfere with local salmon runs and dominate the rivers and displace them. But these AquaAdvantage salmon, they are engineered to be sterile. They're triploids. They have too many chromosomes for their own good. They only have one sex chromosome per each, so instead of being XX or XY, they're just X.
Okay.
Also meaning the entire population is female. So the entire population is sterile, female, on land, and thousands of miles from any sort of natural native salmon habitat. Furthermore, downstream of the pens are lakes and rivers that are lethally warm to salmon.
Right.
So it looks like a pretty cool setup as far as an aquaculture experiment goes. One of the unfortunate things is, though, that unless you're already using developed land, this is Panama we're talking about, so to clear land to make pens, you're probably going to have to cut down rainforests.
That there are other places where that could work.
Right.
There's a lot of empty space in, there's a lot of places. I know they do, shrimp farming in Arizona. That would be an interesting place. And that state's already paved over, so the ecological impact isn't going to be quite so big.
And any water you'll find in Arizona is certainly lethally warm to, to salmon fry.
That is one thing that we have to realize, that if this labeling initiative goes through and we start losing a lot of funding for this kind of science because of the lack of public awareness, that's going to affect us in a lot of ways. There are possibilities of using GMOs and organic together.
Yeah.
And many of the GMO crops that are already out are better for the environment than even organic. So we'd be throwing away a tool in our toolbox, as with global warming we are really going to need.
We need this tool. This is a tool that we need if people are going to survive. Here's the deal. This is my opinion. But we have, like I said before, we're approaching 7 billion people on this planet, and the human growth curve is beginning to looking a little bit exponential, we'll say. And the thing about people is that they tend to live on land that could otherwise be used for agriculture. So as we have more and more people, we have less and less land. And we understand that, that as humans, as the species that has basically covered all the land when we can, we have to manage the ecology. If we're going to have our modern civilization and have an ecology that works, this is something we're going to have to pay attention to, and we should use every tool that is available to us. And I hear a lot of people on the I hear a lot of people on the left saying, well, there's too many people. We need to have less people. We need to have, we need to have less people on the world to be, sociologically and biologically stable. Well, here's the thing. Here's the question about that. And my question to you is, that means people are going to have to stop having sex, and that means people are going to not want children. Where have I heard this argument before? I believe it's from the pro-lifers. And how well is that working for the pro-lifers? Seriously. People are going to take contraception. You have to do a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of things. And yes, I would like to see less people on Earth because I don't want to kill people, and I don't want it to happen through starvation. I want to have it happen through choice. I want people to decide.
And I think that's where the biggest political difficulty comes in with the argument that I hear all the time when I'm saying that, you know, these GMO fish or these GMO crops are going to have a higher yield and be able to feed more people.
Yeah.
Somebody will say, well, why would we want to do that? The biggest problem in the world is overpopulation as it is. Okay, well, you tell me then, who decides?
Right.
Who decides who lives and who dies? Who decides who can and cannot breed? Are we really interested in implementing that much control over another human being's life that we're going to tell them whether or not their genes are good enough to pass on?
Yeah.
That makes me uncomfortable in sort of a World War II kind of way.
Exactly. If you think there are too many people, are you going to be in line?
Yeah.
To cut down on overpopulation? I know I'm not going to be.
Nope, me either.
That's the question that comes. It would be nice if we didn't have this kind of strain on our environment, but we do. And that's people are good, and we need that.
I think one of the main problems that the left has, unfortunately, is that a lot of people on the left are not struggling in any way.
Right.
They can go to Whole Foods and spend $200 on groceries. It's not that big of a deal. They have to realize that there are people on the planet who have no food and don't have that choice. And they're, because of their scientific illiteracy, now actually going to be directly affecting whether or not people live or die.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we have that right to do that.
No. And it's blaming the tool. And here's where I'm going to let my political side out a little bit. And I'm going to say this much. If you have a problem with the way these corporations are doing things, and if you have a problem with, with Monsanto, with Dow, whatever, it's not the tool. It's the person using the tool. And that's going to be true for genetic engineering. That's going to be true for the internet. That's going to be true for any technology that ever exists. And you are not going to help your cause by spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and lies. We need to get to the truth. If you want to find some, malfeasance from a corporation, you don't need to look to genetic engineering. If you want to be against Monsanto, you don't have to, be scary. Go look. Do the research. Be science positive. Dan Lombardo and Amber Kost, thank you. Did I get that right?
Yeah, Amber Sherwood-Kay, actually.
Amber Sherwood-Kay, okay. Thank you guys very much for helping me out. It's been a heck of an episode, and I don't think we're done with this topic, but it's important with I-522 coming up that we need to start talking about it now, so thank you very much.
Yes, and vote on Tuesday.
Vote on Tuesday, yeah. And on that tool thing, let me ask you, if we got spurned, our organization spurned us, does that mean we have to be against gay marriage? This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Olvey. With me was Amber Sherwood-Kay and Dan Lombardo. We're going to be at NPCC down by PLU in a few minutes, and that was a big one. Don't know where to go from here. See you guys next week.
Station.